It's for What's Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Ebola raging in western Sierra Leone. Protesters in Guinea try to stop construction of an Ebola treatment center. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The Ebola epidemic now reportedly raging in western Sierra Leone. The National Ebola Response Center reports dozens falling sick each day. It says 49 cases reported alone in two Ebola zones Monday in and around the capital Freetown. The NERC says more than 20 fatalities are reported each day in both zones, the western area urban and western area rural. Justine Greeney, the United Kingdom's International Development Secretary, was in Sierra Leone Tuesday visiting a healthcare training facility. She called for a more broad international response to the health crisis that has killed more than 4,500 people, mostly in West Africa.
We're cracking on with making sure that we're getting the training that we need to get the healthcare workers in place. We're making sure we're able to bury people safely in the quantities, unfortunately, that are now needed. And then the treatment beds will triple the capacity to treat people that we've currently got here in Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leonean authorities, meanwhile, had to impose a curfew in the eastern town of Koidu Tuesday, following a dispute between youths and police over a suspected case of Ebola. Tensions between people and authorities have complicated efforts to contain the deadly virus. In Guinea Tuesday, another hard-hit West African country, hundreds of residents in a neighborhood near the capital of Conakry protested construction of an Ebola treatment center nearby. Meanwhile, Rwanda Tuesday announced travelers from the U.S. and Spain will be singled out for special screening. If they have a temperature, they'll be denied entry. The U.S. has tightened restrictions on travelers arriving in the U.S. from Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea, announcing they'll only be able to land at five airports. This is VOA News. The World Health Organization says an experimental Ebola vaccine could be in use by January. WHO Assistant Director Dr. Marie-Paul Kini said in Geneva Tuesday, clinical trials of Ebola vaccines are underway or planned in Europe, the U.S., and Africa.
And we expect both for the chimp adenovirus as well as from the VSV vaccine to have initial results. Of course, these trials will continue for 6 months to a year, but to have initial results about safety and immunogenicity, to have a choice of a dose level by the end of this year, so in December. That's clearly the plan.
She said if the vaccines are deemed safe, there could be a West African trial in January using tens of thousands of doses. Meanwhile, a pan-African initiative called Give Against Ebola is underway, aimed at soliciting money from Africans in the fight against Ebola. Valerie Traoré is executive director of NIAL, the agency coordinating the campaign.
There are fundraising initiatives that are happening in Europe, in North America, in Asia, that are targeting many international organizations, and these are great. These are needed. These also have the expertise to be able to help. But we need to get to a point where, as Africans, we also have that connection, feel the responsibility to be able to contribute to what is happening on our continent.
She says the goal is to raise badly needed funds and wire them directly to the bank accounts of small organizations working to contain the disease in the three hardest hit West African countries. Libya's internationally recognized government meeting in Tobruk said Tuesday its forces are getting ready to retake the capital Tripoli after Islamist allied militia from Misrata took the city in August. It has also called on youths in the capital to join ranks with forces to liberate themselves, but it urged civilian supporters to abstain from revenge attacks and instead hand over captured militia to the army. Famed South African Paralympian Oscar Pistorius was taken Tuesday from the Pretoria High Court to a nearby prison where he's begun serving a five-year sentence for fatally shooting his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp. He'll be placed in the hospital wing. His legal team said that their client is likely to serve about 10 months of the sentence and then transferred to house arrest. Judge Thokozila Masipa announced the sentence earlier Tuesday, nearly 7 months after the high-profile trial began. Andre Tenner is a Steenkamp family friend.
Terrible, terrible injustice. Terrible injustice. If he gets out, he can go back to what he did before, athletics. He can carry on with his life, but nothing, whoever does, can bring Reva back. So, yeah, it's going to be a terrible injustice.
Judge Masipa described her verdict as fair and just, both to society and to the accused. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir ruled for 25 years following military coup, has announced his intention to run for re-election next year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, October 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir gets his party's endorsement for re-election.
If he is a president, everybody will feel satisfied that we will all be on one boat. So his re-election or nomination will give us this hope that the national dialogue will go ahead.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister. South Sudan warring parties have admitted for the first time that they are responsible for the deadly violence in their country. Will Uganda Airlines return as a regional carrier? And President Robert Mugabe is urged to rein in the political activities of First Lady Grace Mugabe.
The purpose of her current activities is not national, but party political. Her messages are not those of, quote, the mother of the nation, unquote, but the messages are partisan, divisive, combative, and self-centered.
Simba Makoni is the leader of the Mavambo Kusile Dawn Party in Zimbabwe. While polio outbreak in Central Africa leads to synchronized vaccinations, and a recent poll shows Americans are worried and anxious about Ebola. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir, who is under an international criminal court arrest warrant for allegedly orchestrating atrocities during the conflict in Darfur, has been nominated for re-election by his National Congress Party for the 2015 election. The 70-year-old Bashir has been in power for 25 years. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal says President Bashir's re-election will make all parties feel at ease to participate in the so-called national dialogue that Mr. Bashir has been promoting. Bilal also tells me that Mr. Bashir's re-election nomination was done fairly because he was chosen from among five other candidates.
In fact, actually, especially in this time, we are looking forward for the national dialogue and his initiative, which is calling for all the Sudanese to sit down round the table and to find out a roadmap for solution of all our problems. And everybody is optimistic about that. And this will be commenced next month. So I think for the outcome of this national dialogue, if he is a president, everybody will feel satisfied that we will all be on one boat. So his re-election or nomination will give us this hope that the national dialogue will go ahead.
Well, one of the opposition parties said that it will not take part in the elections because if it believes that the election will not be credible because there's no democracy in Sudan.
You know, actually, most of the opposition parties, they have no actually any sort of popular support. And after 10 years, they will not have it. But in the national dialogue, we can reach a consensus that we can postpone the elections for 1 year or 2 years, and we give time for parties to get ready and to build up their contacts with their followers. And this is one of the things which is going to be discussed in the round table when the national dialogue begins.
Some people say, Mr. Minister, that Mr. Bashir is continuing on in office because if he leaves office, then the ICC will go after him. He is concerned about the charges at the International Criminal Court against him.
Actually, this is not true. The ICC is not one of the causes that he is linked to his office. This is not true. As Sudanese, we think he's remaining now in seat in office for this period is very crucial, not because of the ICC. And even most of those who have good relations with Sudan, they think his presence can make some sort of a guarantee that we could reach a consensus easily if he is in office rather than he is out of the office.
I'm sure President Bashir is aware of the economic situation. There are many young people in your country who don't have jobs. How is he going to address this during this election period?
The economical problem is not the only Sudan is facing it. It's almost all over the world. Even America suffered from that. In Sudan, yes, after the situation of the South, we suffered a lot because 80% of our economy gone with the separation of the South. Everybody was expecting that the Sudan is going to collapse. And this doesn't happen. And now there is improvement in our economy. We had a very good season now, and almost everything is improving.
Achmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. The warring parties in South Sudan's conflict have admitted for the first time that they are responsible for the deadly conflict in their country. In a communique released after a week of talks in Tanzania, different factions of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or the SPLM, also made a commitment to reunite themselves. Waket Simon Wudu of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
Akol Paul Kordit, the spokesperson of the SPLM delegation loyal to President Salva Kiir, told the reporters at Juba Airport that the meeting in Arusha was a big breakthrough for the different factions of the ruling party. Kordit says three SPLM factions took part in the Arusha talks: the group loyal to the president, the SPLM in opposition led by former Vice President Riek Machar, and the group of 11 made up of former members of the ruling party who were detained when fighting broke out in Juba on December 15th last year. Kordit says a key issue that the factions agreed to was to
acknowledge a collective responsibility for the crisis in South Sudan that has taken a great toll on the lives and property of our people.
Kordit says the factions also rejected the use of violence to resolve South Sudan's crisis and agreed that it began as a political dispute.
The parties also acknowledge that the dialogue, rules and procedures are the only means to resolve internal differences and lack of consensus over important party issues among SPLM leaders.
In a communique that Kordit read out at the airport, the three factions indirectly acknowledged that there is an ethnic element to the crisis in South Sudan. The SPLM factions refer to the fighting as a civil war in the communique.
The parties also underscore the fact that a divided SPLM will automatically fragment the country along ethnic and regional fault lines. Therefore, the crisis must be urgently brought to an end by the SPLM collective leadership through genuine and honest dialogue that puts the interests of the people and the nation above all.
The parties say the talks in Arusha are essentially an internal SPLM dialogue and are separate from the IGAD-led peace talks being held in Ethiopia. But they say the two processes are, quote, mutually reinforcing and necessary to restore peace in South Sudan. The parties drafted a framework for future SPLM dialogues and agreed to meet again in 2 weeks' time. The SPLM factions pledged that they will take steps to stop the war in South Sudan and lead the government and the people of the country towards peace, stability, and prosperity. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
In Zimbabwe, the leader of the Mavambo Kusili Dawn Party has challenged President Robert Mugabe to come clean on his wife's public statements in which she has attacked perceived rivals ahead of ZANU-PF's elective Congress in December this year and take appropriate action since he appoints all ministers. Addressing a press conference in Harare on Tuesday, Simba Makoni accused First Lady Grace Mugabe of straying into the territory of the head of state by making negative assessments of the competence and performance of government ministers, as well as redefining the attributes and functions of the office of the vice president. Ivan Chifera of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Harare.
Makoni told a press conference in Harare that while Grace Mugabe is the wife of the head of state and government of Zimbabwe, she is not a state functionary and did not deserve huge state logistical, security, communications and resources deployed in her service. Mrs. Mugabe, who is expected to take over the leadership of the ZANU-PF Women's Wing at the party's December elective congress, on Friday held a last Meet the People rally in Marondera, after addressing meetings in all the country's provinces. Before the tour, all roads were leading to a Mazoe farm, with activists, including church leaders, apparently being summoned to endorse a nomination publicly.
The purpose of her current activities is not national, but party political. Her messages are not those of, quote, the mother of the nation, unquote, but the messages are partisan, divisive, combative, and self-centered.
Makwani said the huge resources used during Ms. Mugabe's meetings and rallies should have been used to alleviate hardships being encountered by millions of Zimbabweans every day.
How many bandages and painkillers could have been put in primary health centers? How many boxes of chalk and exercise books could have been put in primary schools? How many bags of mealie-meal and bundles of vegetables could have been served in military barracks, in police camps, in prisons, or even in hospitals, had the resources currently deployed to Mrs. Grace Mugabe, state resources, been used for national purposes?
The meetings, he said, had paralyzed government as ministers, senior civil service, and security chiefs attended the meetings, which he said were not national but party events. Makoni accused Grace Mugabe of straying into the territory of the head of state by making negative statements on the competence and performance of government ministers, as well as redefining the attributes and functions of the office of the vice president.
Where does she get this authority? Who accords her the mandate to stray into the territory of the head of state and government of the Republic of Zimbabwe?
Makoni challenged President Mugabe to come clean on his wife's statements and take appropriate action, since he's the one who appoints all ministers. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
It is Wednesday morning, October 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. In a meeting last week, members of the Civil Aviation Authority and government met to discuss the revival of the Ugandan Airlines. Although some say the carrier will bring pride and tourism to the nation, it will take a massive investment by the Ugandan government. Lisbeth Pollard reports from Kampala.
14 years ago, Uganda Airlines was dissolved by the government after an attempt to go private was hampered by a lack of investors. A few years later, Air Uganda, a privately held company, established itself as a leader in regional destinations. Yet earlier this year, Uganda's Civil Aviation Authority pulled Air Uganda's operating license, citing safety concerns, and an opportunity for Uganda Airlines to reinvigorate itself was presented. Last week, the CAA, Ministry of Works and Transport, and the Ministry of Finance, Planning, and Economic Development met to establish the preliminary framework that could bring Uganda Airlines back as the country's flagship carrier. The CAA says talks are in the works as shareholders attempt to hammer out a proposal. Further discussions with the Ministry of Works and Transport, the Ministry of Finance, and the Cabinet are scheduled. If successful, the framework for the airline's revival could be taken before Parliament and worked into the next fiscal year. Former Ugandan Airlines General Manager Dixon Turinawe says the cost would be substantial, but he thinks a national airline would be good for the country.
There must be that will to finance. There must be a willingness to actually lose money for maybe up to 3 years. You capitalize and lose money. And the capitalization should be integrative, not just saying we buy an aircraft. You see why it is necessary. Uganda is landlocked. In being landlocked, the national airline is strategic.
Although regional competition would be stiff, Turinawe contends that as long as you invest in long-range routes and aircraft, the small regional low-cost airlines could form a mutually beneficial relationship with the future Uganda Airlines.
Private airlines could actually feed you. You could have an arrangement. But you must be willing to put in money to get modern aircraft. For example, you may not be able to fly from Arusha to Zanzibar, but you can have an arrangement with this person. He feeds you. You have your hub, and then you take off for a long-range operation.
In the next few weeks, government will continue to address the reality of bringing Uganda Airways back to Entebbe Airport. If there is majority approval, funding for the carrier will likely be written into next year's fiscal budget. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
The United Nations is assisting 6 Central African countries in organizing synchronized vaccinations after Cameroon reported a 5th case of the wild poliovirus on its territory. 4 wild poliovirus cases had been reported earlier this year in neighboring Equatorial Guinea. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
Charlotte Fatin Diaye, the resident representative of the World Health Organization, WHO, in Cameroon, says all children under the age of 5 in Chad, Gabon, Congo-Brazzaville, and the Central African Republic should be inoculated because the spread of polio in neighboring Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea has made the crippling disease an international public health emergency.
Le Cameroun fait partie des pays exportateurs et nous espérons qu'au sortir de cet assaut final, nous espérons que...
She says Cameroon is an exporting country for the virus, and WHO elevated the risk assessment of the international spread of polio from Central Africa, particularly Cameroon, to very high, and she expects all children in the area to be vaccinated so that the wild polio virus can be eradicated from the world. All hospitals in Central Africa have been equipped with anti-polio vaccines since the World Health Organization and countries of the region organized the first phase of the campaign last September. The second phase will begin on October 31. Fatin Diaye says the 6 Central African governments should continue to vaccinate all their children to stop the spread of the virus.
Nous lançons aussi une campagne synchronisée pour tous les pays d'Afrique centrale. Tous les pays d'Afrique centrale ont démarré une campagne.
We are appealing to all Central African countries to take part in the synchronized vaccination days so that this disease should be eradicated, she says. The WHO recommends citizens of affected countries traveling abroad to carry a vaccination certificate, but that has not been possible in Central African countries like the war-torn Central African Republic. Cameroon's Minister of Health, André Mamafuda, told VOA that his country is bent on eradicating the disease, but that it will not be possible without neighboring countries cooperating.
L'engagement est pris par les États d'éradiquer la poliomyélite. Nous lançons dans le cadre de l'ensemble des pays de l'Afrique.
He says Cameroon has taken moves to eradicate polio and that in the near future it will no longer be an exporting country for the disease. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A recent survey shows more than 4 in 10 Americans are worried that they or a relative might catch the Ebola virus. Viewer's Caroline Presutti takes a look at why Americans are so anxious about a virus that so far has led to only 3 confirmed Ebola cases in the United States.
In the world of 24-hour news...
This is a Fox News alert. The CDC calling the first 2 nurses who got sick with...
It is hard to avoid reports about the Ebola threat.
Ebola is not that easy to catch.
Some say this coverage just increases Ebola anxiety among Americans.
They're actually calling it Fearbola.
Washington resident Janelle Hugie says Ebola just adds to her already high stress level.
I have hand sanitizer, you know, napkins with me.
Staying healthy is how she fights back.
I feel very anxious about going to the hospital. Like the ERs where all the... It's just a lot of things happening.
A new Gallup poll shows Americans list Ebola as one of the country's top 10 problems. And another survey shows nearly half of Americans worry they or a loved one will get infected. The American Psychological Association says misinformation causes alarm. After the first person in the U.S. was diagnosed with Ebola and admitted to a Dallas, Texas hospital, the head of the Centers for Disease Control, Thomas Frieden, said this.
There is no doubt in my mind that we will stop it here.
Then the patient, Thomas Eric Duncan, died, and 2 nurses who treated him were diagnosed with Ebola. Frieden also said this.
Virtually any hospital in this country that can do isolation for Ebola.
But it was at virtually any hospital that the virus spread to the Dallas nurses, and that's what panics some Americans.
Psychologists say a little anxiety is good because it increases awareness, but too much can be paralyzing.
I think that raised some anxiety.
Mary Alvord is a psychologist who specializes in anxiety. She says her patients feel anxious when they aren't in control.
When we don't know what's going to happen, we don't have the information, and so then our imaginations fill in the gaps. or conversations with other people fill in the gaps.
The best advice is to get facts from the experts, but sometimes even the experts don't have the answers.
I don't think we can predict when this epidemic is going to be over.
We may not know what we don't know.
Here's one thing doctors do know. Ebola is contagious, and fear can be too. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Washington.
Minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. A showdown pitting the Nigeria Super Falcons and South Africa's Banyana Banyana looms large in the first semifinals at the Telecom Namibia Mobile Africa Women's Championships at the Sam Nujoma Stadium in Katutura Township, Windhoek, Namibia, today, Wednesday. It was at this very stage at the last championships in Bata, Equatorial Guinea, where South Africa pipped the then defending champions Nigeria 1-0. It is also the first time that a South African female or male team beat their Nigerian opposite number in a competitive encounter. While the South Africans are keen to repeat their previous success, they face a new look Super Falcons team out to avenge their defeat 2 years ago. This explosive encounter will give way to the second semi-final featuring the vastly improved Cameroon against Ivory Coast, who eliminated defending champions Equatorial Guinea to book their place at these championships. Winners of today's semifinals are guaranteed a ticket to the 2015 FIFA Women's World Cup. Meanwhile, newly appointed Nigerian Super Eagles coach Shuaibu Amodu named 66 players for his remaining Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers following a meeting with the Nigeria Football Federation Secretary General Musa Amadu in Abuja on Tuesday. The African champions must win their remaining matches away against the Republic of Congo and at home against South Africa to stand a chance of qualifying for the 2015 Nations Cup. Staying in Nigeria, the Confederation of African Football is sending inspectors next week to assess the facilities at the Akwa Ibom Stadium, where Nigeria plan to host South Africa in their Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifier next month. The newly constructed Akwa Ibom Stadium in Uyo, South Nigeria, is not among the venues CAF had inspected and certified as meeting all the standards required to stage a CAF-sanctioned event. Finally, Kenya's world marathon record holder Dennis Kipruto Kimeto is a finalist for the IWF World Male Athlete of the Year Award. Kimeto set the world marathon record when he prevailed in 2 hours 2 minutes and 57 seconds in Berlin, Germany last month, while Ethiopia's Genzebe Dibaba is a finalist for the World Female Athlete of the Year Award. Dibaba set the 1500 meter and 3000 meters world indoor records. She also won the gold medal in 3000 meters at the World Indoor Championships and IWF Continental Cup. The award winners will be named at the World Athletics Gala on the 21st of November in Monaco. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, October 22nd.
Permit me to call on the Nigerian government as a matter of urgency to ban the culture of telling a married woman to drink the water they used in bathing her dead husband. Such culture at this 21st century should be on hold. Ebola is real. We have to be careful. Government Patrick Okoro Crawford. Nigeria.
And we thank you, listener, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. That's it for this Wednesday, October 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.